Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Matt Harrison, is the author of our Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism. This new devotional resource is available in print and as an ebook. Learn more about Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran?
That was every Sunday, 8 a.m. for Catholic Mass. My parents eventually got tired of all the rules and turned Lutheran, and they found that dull and went back to Catholic.
We shouldn't basically create a child library where parents check out their kids like books, you know, for a couple of hours at night or on the weekends. Families should mean something.
We might also then be able to think a little bit more reasonably about why it is that our Lord did choose to have men in the ministry as his representatives, because it is a kind of a spiritual warfare for which we are particularly suited.
Remember that the same Lord who spared Nineveh destroyed Sodom. That is to say that his patience is not without an end.
While snow blowing our driveways, hardy Minnesotans love to listen to Issues Etc.
It's a fascinating thing. I've actually spent about the last 15 minutes just toying around with this interactive map that was posted in a story for The Atlantic, the story called The Geography of Partisan Prejudice. It's a map that shows you the entire United States broken down into counties. They call it a heat map because it shows the varying degree, in this case, of political or overall political prejudice. And the results are counterintuitive, or maybe they're not. They are shocking. The entire state of Florida is basically one big block of politically prejudiced counties, along with, well, where you might not expect to find it, but after a moment's thought, maybe you should. LA County, Boston, and all of Massachusetts, they do not fare well in terms of being politically prejudiced. What can we learn from something like this, measuring the political prejudice, especially at a time when everyone agrees, if they agree on anything, that the United States is politically divided? And what does it have to do, if anything, with religion? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 7th of March. We're going to be talking about a story in The Atlantic titled The Geography of Partisan Prejudice. Terry Mattingly will be our guest. Dr. Michael New joins us after that of the Catholic University of America. We'll talk about the effects of pro-life legislation on declining abortion rates. Then we're going to spend some time talking with Dr. Ken Sherb about policy-based governance. Now, that's something that has found its way since the 80s into governing boards of corporations and all kinds of organizations, including the church. And that's where we'll focus our thoughts on policy-based governance with Dr. Ken Sherb in the last hour of Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about a story in The Atlantic titled The Geography of Partisan Prejudice, Terry Mattingly. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
This is a story that focuses on political prejudice, the questions that form the basis for the data that on which this map was assembled are essentially about politics. Does this have anything to do, in your mind, with religion?
Well, that depends on where the most important and influential news about religion happens to be written. Do stories in Middle America end up causing as much heat and attention and division as stories that are broken in, say, New York or Washington? What would you think about that?
Well, yes, I think it makes a huge difference, as you often say, in what zip code the news originates.
I mean, and so if you are a skeptical type person about how religion news, and especially religion news that gets interpreted as political news, if you're sort of a skeptic at looking, you know, at that sort of question, one of the first things you want to do is go to this map and zoom in on the all-important all influential counties along the Acela zone. And in particular, you want to zoom on up to places like Washington, D.C., and New York, and Boston, and you want to see how they do. And that's exactly what a lot of people would be highly predictable, people like our friend Rodrier. That's exactly what people started doing. They were helped along by one particular paragraph in this story that, you know, that probably the most quoted section of this story. And listen to this and think in terms of implications for the institutions that cover religion and politics and culture and morality and a lot of other things. In general, the most politically intolerant Americans, according to the analysis, tend to be whiter, more highly educated, older, more urban, and more partisan themselves. This finding aligns in some ways with previous research, et cetera, et cetera. These people, quote, they don't routinely talk with people who disagree with them. This isolation makes it easier for them to caricature their ideological opponents. And then it goes on. Now, if you were looking for highly educated, urban, older, influential, wealthy, politically interested people, where would you go and look for them?
Well, I mean, again, I'm going to probably have to apply some stereotypes, but I'm going to be looking in the major urban centers of the United States. I'm going to look at New York, Washington, D.C. I'm going to look at Chicago. I'm going to look at L.A. I'm going to look at Houston, all those places.
Now, I think it's very important, and I've heard from some readers who have wanted to stress this, that the survey doesn't say that Republicans and conservatives are not prejudiced against liberals. And to me, I think several months ago, you and I discussed how depressed I was about that statistic, that something in a different survey, that something like 40% of Republicans, when asked about Democrats, the first word that came to mind was hate. And then they asked Democrats, what's the first word that comes to mind when they think of Republicans? And they said, hate. The point of this survey, the point it seems to be making, is that there's isolation and then there's intense isolation. There are places where a lot of people of a lot of different beliefs tend to still be living together of a lot of different social levels. And it noted in particular upstate New York as a place that is actually quite politically and culturally complex. You know, that when you go to Buffalo or you go into the I mean, you might have a lot of Democrats up there, but they're still surrounded by a lot of farmers and a lot of other people. And then you would look in some other parts of the nation that were found to not be as intense in terms of prejudices, biases, and preconceptions. And you found that these were places where, you know, there probably are a lot of different kinds of people. I mean, you can't live in a city like Nashville or Knoxville or Atlanta, for Pete's sake, and not know a lot of people who have radically different beliefs of different kinds. You've got universities there. You've got major industry. You've got people who have moved from the north. Those are all complex, and there are realities there. What this study is saying, though, is if you want to find people who are really living lives where they are not in touch with the viewpoints of the people that they consider their political opponents, you go get on Acela trains and head into the rich, powerful communities of the big urban power centers on the Northeast or around LA and Northern California. And that has a tremendous impact or potential impact. I mean, we're not talking cause and effect here, but you'd have to say that that raises questions about how that might influence American mass media and news media in particular. And while this article keeps talking politics, 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 you know, the minute I read it, I thought of that mantra that we have at Get Religion, that one of the biggest problems we have is that everybody covers religion as if it was politics alone. And I flashed back to all kinds of stuff. I had fun writing a piece on this for Get Religion. And one of my memories was going back almost 30 years to a piece that also ran in The Atlantic by the prominent liberal Harvard theologian Harvey Cox, when he was, you know, to his kind of delight, was invited to do lectures at Regent University in Virginia, otherwise known as Pat Robertson U. And he went down there and found, to his surprise, that while this was a place that tended to be very theologically conservative, which affected things like gay rights and abortion, walking around the campus, he met lots of Democrats. He met lots of people who were frustrated pro-life Democrats. He met lots of people from different backgrounds. He heard lively theological debates about how religion affected politics and how it didn't. And at one point, he all but says, frankly, I found more diversity and more complexity in the faculty lounge at Regent than at Harvard. In a way, isn't that what this study is saying 30 years later?
So one of the things that I found fascinating about the story is, because it's focused on what it's calling overall political prejudice, a willingness to hear or to interact with someone you consider to be your political opponent, was the state of Florida. And I got to believe that the northern counties of Florida, the mid-state counties of Florida, are trending. The whole state is practically dark green, is the way it appears on my browser, which means very prejudiced, politically prejudiced. The political prejudice there is of a different flavor than the political prejudice in the south counties of Florida and the coastal counties of Florida.
Yeah, I have no idea what to make of that. I also don't know what to make of the state of South Carolina.
Same picture.
In this thing. And this makes me wonder, quite frankly, about the level of their polling in some parts of the country, and you know, the people that participated in the poll. Now, as someone who's lived in Florida, Florida is one of those states where people tend to be, in my experience, kind of on one extreme or the other. It's a very complex place culturally, and there's a lot of friction between the communities in Florida. But, you know, I was surprised to say, I mean, I have family in Orlando. It's not one of my favorite places to hang out, not because of them, but just because of Orlando and Disney and traffic and heat and mosquitoes and other things. But I get the impression that Orlando is a pretty normal place for most of the people who live there and work there. And for example, that it doesn't set off the kinds of cultural sparks that you would see once you begin to pull within range of Miami, you know, or something like that. And I have trouble believing that in the parts of Florida that really more resemble the South, the Panhandle region and the highly rural state, part of the state that runs down the middle away from the coasts down toward Lake Okeechobee, south of Orlando, I have a lot of trouble believing that they would be radically different from Georgia or parts of Tennessee. So I have a sneaking suspicion that intense research focused on some areas of the country more than others. But this is stirring up a lot of conversation. In particular, as you would expect, Rod teed off on this thing and has had some interactions with one of the authors of the piece that readers might want to look up. But my point here is, when you stop and think about what are the most politically divisive subjects in American life right now, I can look at this map, like Florida, maybe, like the parts of the Texas border, and say, okay, immigration might have lots of people mad at lots of other people. But, I have to think what we're dealing with here is religion and issues related to religion. And that made me think of some of the fine points and deep data in that famous Pew Forum study that created the buzzword nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the religiously unaffiliated. And the great pollster that I quote all the time here, named John C. Green, was one of the key people in helping create that poll. And he came away from it saying that some of the greatest cultural implications of this is that the religiously unaffiliated nuns were best defined by their uniformity of thought on religious and moral issues, specifically issues connected to sexuality, and that that was where it was possible to say that their beliefs were best defined as an antipathy to traditional religious people of all kinds. And that happened to be the exact same results that came out of two pollsters at the City University in New York that I've been following for the last 15 years. And they have continued to research what they call the anti-fundamentalist voter. And that these are voters primarily in the Acela zone and in very deep blue sections of America, college towns, etc. These are people whose political beliefs are best defined by their antipathy, or even in some cases, hatred of conservative Christians. Now, turn this around. Are you likely to find places in this map where you might see extreme prejudice by lots of people toward, CNN or other forms of liberal power? In other words, where if you find really, really hardcore Trump areas. But stop and think about this for a second. If you live in a major city in the Bible Belt or the South or the Midwest, how do you go to a movie theater, pick up a newspaper, or turn on your radio and not be constantly exposed to the viewpoints of people different than yourself? I mean, it's like a daily, I hear for this from people all the time. It was one of the major topics that we discussed at Issues, etc. at the conference a year and a half or so ago. You're going to be exposed to a lot of different points of view because you're exposed to American mass media. But if you live in New York City, or if you live in Boston, or if you live on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., how much are you exposed to perfectly ordinary, rural, military family, church-going, middle-of-the-road conservatives? Values voters, to use that phrase I hate so much. How much do you run into them in daily life? Not much.
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday, March the 7th. We're talking with him about a story in The Atlantic titled The Geography of Partisan Prejudice. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. When we come back, let's talk about whether or not those who are measured as most politically prejudiced actually interact with those that they find politically repugnant.
Many patients are upset to learn that doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath anymore.
National Review columnist Wesley Smith talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
That's a real shame because the Hippocratic Oath protects patient safety. The speech I will give at the conference will describe the consequences of violating Hippocratic values in healthcare and the things that can occur in the healthcare system if we move away from Hippocratic medicine to a more utilitarian bioethics.
You can meet and hear Wesley Smith making the case for the Hippocratic Oath at the one and only 2019 Making the Case conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc. We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a story in The Atlantic titled The Geography of Partisan Prejudice. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, picking up on something you said before the break, combining a couple things, the nuns that you said, according to the research, are a kind of one mind, you said the anti-fundamentalist voter. If it's true, and I'm thinking of the nun that lives in LA or lives in Boston, that comes in pretty hard on this map, or that lives in Queens County or someplace like that in New York, we know that they don't want to interact with fundamentalists. Do they actually interact with, have they ever met one? Or is it simply that picture that the media has painted of kind of the Trump voter that they're really reacting to, just a caricature?
Well, I think that they believe they know what those people are like, and that they believe they know what they believe as a rule. But once again, where's their information? I think it's very important to reinforce for our listeners that we are not saying that lots of different kinds of Americans live in these kind of concrete walled silos that we've read so much about in this niche media age. I mean, someone living off in East Texas who never turns on anything but Fox and reads their favorite conservative bloggers and listens to Rush Limbaugh day after day, they're living in a concrete wall silo. And they probably have some pretty negative points of view about some people in the world. But every time they turn on anything else in their lives, they are to some degree exposed to the viewpoints of others, even if it's stereotypical. The question here is not whether Americans are living in concrete walled silos. The issue is whether some of those silos are more powerful than others, and some of those silos are not more culturally isolated than others. Let me just give you an example. Texas. I know Texas pretty well. I think a lot of people in other parts of the country would be very surprised to learn that Houston and Dallas have Democratic administrations. Not just the People's Republic of Austin, you know, that famous weird place where the government is based in Texas, but its whole self-image is being the place in Texas where you go to live if you're a Texan, but you don't want to live in Texas. But Dallas is full of a lot of different alternative communities, and you can't live anywhere in Dallas without a lot of exposure to Latinos and the gay community and people who have been moved in from the North and other parts. I mean, Atlanta would be another example. Atlanta is in many ways a very liberal, complex city in the old meaning of the word liberal. And you can't live in Georgia without running into the power of Atlanta. My point in all of this is saying none of those cities, I think, are as monochromatic as, say, Boston or New York. Now, trust me, I'm now beginning to learn that there are parts of New York that are radically different than others. But let's face it, I mean, New York is a much more liberal town, culturally in particular, than Dallas is a conservative town. Does that make sense? And who has more power? If you were going to pick the most powerful cities in America right now, the ones where the water really hits the wheel in terms of shaping our culture, wouldn't you immediately say, okay, let's run them off? New York's got to be number one. Washington would be number two. Number three, it's got to either be LA or the Bay Area, right? Then you start thinking, well, what about the power within medicine and academia? And then, oh, surely think about Harvard Law School, Boston. And then you try to think of, you know, another city. At that point, you can begin debating. It used to be Chicago. Maybe it's Seattle. Maybe it's Houston now. Maybe it's, you know, we can get into a debate about that. But those top five or six are pretty bulletproof in terms of their power in America. Now, look at those areas and then look on this map in the Atlantic to compare with evangelicalism. Who has more power? Washington, New York, Boston, LA, and the Bay Area, or, oh, I don't know, Orlando, Nashville, Grand Rapids, Wheaton, and Colorado Springs?
So, Terry, you're a religion writer at a news outlet, and you've read the Atlantic story. What do you need to know next? Where do you go from here with the data that's there?
Well, knowing what I know and teaching what I get to teach at the King's College in Lower Manhattan in New York City, I would send them straight to the remarkable 2005 self-study of the New York Times, when in the midst of an ethical crisis, I believe that's called preserving our readers' trust. In the midst of this ethical crisis, they did, they're to be commended for doing this, the New York Times leadership did a self-study. And they hired a bunch of people very familiar with the Times, some former Times people and then others, and they had them study the New York Times, and they came back, and their key, other than some concern about anonymous sources and a couple of other journalism issues, the big idea of this report is the New York Times newsroom doesn't understand rural America, middle America, the military, agrarian society, and religion. Religion keeps coming up over and over and over in this report. There's no one in our newsroom who understands how religious people in America think, how they live, who they actually are. And it makes a number of suggestions that the New York Times doesn't appear to have taken all that seriously in terms of trying to increase the intellectual and cultural diversity in that all-important kind of cultural College of Cardinals newsroom. Now, if you read that 2005 study, which is still online, we have all kinds of links to it at getreligion.org. If you read that study and then look at this map, you're going to go, okay, that's how this works.
Would it be nice to have another map that would overlay something, the hard data that you so often talk about, like church attendance, things like that, county by county, where you could click it on and off to see any correspondence or surprises you might find?
Yeah, and in fact, I would take that New York Times study as offering you some clues. Maybe we would have an overlay that just showed income. Then we'd have an overlay that would show claimed religious participation. Then we could have an overlay that would show military personnel, families who have had family members go into the military. These are the sorts of cultural patterns and life commitments that I think would be very interesting to look at in comparison or alongside this piece in the Atlantic.
Charitable giving?
Charitable giving, that's a great one. That would be very important as well.
What would that tell you? What kind of picture do you think would emerge there with about a minute and a half?
Well, I think you'd get the picture that you kind of have there at the Atlantic, but I think you'd get a more fleshed out version of it. And again, I want to stress, we're not saying that there are not powerful prejudices at play in other parts of the country. The issue here is not whether some Americans are prejudiced and others aren't. It's how deep are those prejudices and how consistent are the focuses of those prejudices when it comes to politics. Who has declared who anathema and has no intention of ever listening to them again? Then I would also say that Andrew Sullivan, the great writer and gay activist, is on to something. He says, this brings us to our fights about the First Amendment. Do you want to live in a country where we get to coerce thought, coerce speech, and just simply say some parts of our country don't need to be listened to at all? Andrew Sullivan, who's a true liberal, would say, no, we don't want to live in that America. Let's not go there. This is a map that will cause a lot of concern for people who take those issues seriously.
Do you expect it to be covered beyond Rod Dreher, Dreher writing about it in the American Conservative about 30 seconds?
Well, I don't know if he ever listens to issues or to Get Religion podcasts, but boy, it'd be great if Ross Douthat wrote a column about it. I think Molly Ziegler-Hemingway should bring that up some night on Special Report or elsewhere. Let's try to keep this survey in play.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for your time.
Glad to be here, as always.
On the other side of the break, Dr. Michael New is going to join us, a visiting assistant professor at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. He has written recently about the effects of pro-life legislation on declining abortion rates. There are a lot of factors in the declining abortion rate. What role do our laws, even the incremental pro-life laws, play? It's time to register to vote for the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Each congregation or multi-point parish must register their pastor and lay voters with the LCMS Office of Secretary by Sunday, March 24th of 2019. A nomination form has been mailed to every LCMS congregation. Learn more at issuesetc.org/LCMSPresident. issuesetc.org/LCMSPresident.
Mark your calendars for the Scott Credit Union Metro East Home and Garden Show, March 16th and 17th, at and to benefit Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville. The Home and Garden Show is a fundraiser produced by a volunteer parents group with the support of regional businesses and partners. The Metro East Home and Garden Show has something for everyone, from the basement to the roof and everything in between, to gardening, lawn care, and landscaping outside your home. From Fred Bird and fabulous prizes, including a flock of Cardinal tickets, to pre-game field passes, and the opportunity to throw out the first pitch at a Cardinal game this season, courtesy of Seavers Equipment, registration required. And remember, pulled pork, potato salad, and more for sale all weekend long. Show admission, parking are free, courtesy of Element Turf. The Scott Credit Union Metro East Home and Garden Show, March 16th and 17th, is sponsored in part by Liberty Fence, Renown Remodeling, Seavers Equipment, and Woods Basement Systems. Show and exhibitor details can be found at mehgs.org.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
We love our on-demand listeners.
You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The difference between being in the world and being of the world finally comes down to being in Christ. However they live, whatever they do, wherever they go, Christians are in Christ. These words from the Reverend Dr. Joel Bierman perfectly encapsulate the March issue of The Lutheran Witness, Life Together, Set Apart. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.